Right, third time's the charm. Part three of podcast three. Discovery and citation.
Okay. More about the prestige economy. Abstracting and indexing journals has been around since the late 1900s. We mentioned that.
Mm-hmm.
And they were a means of allowing people to see what had been published on the subject. So they were those big printed volumes with fancy schmancy subject headings, which you'd know all about, mm-hmm. Catherine. And then from the late 1960s, they'd been replaced by online databases, which have changed the way in which we locate information in quite radical ways. Like, we used to be dependent on having the exact subject heading for something, whereas now we can go in with whatever term that we use and find stuff because computers can search by word. When I first started doing online database searching, one of the very early searches I did was for ATMs, automatic teller machines, way back in the early 1980s, you know, wow. Bankomats or whatever we call them. They called all sorts of things around the world. And we wouldn't have been able to do that in a print journal because it would have taken the Library of Congress or whatever 10 years to come up with a word for automatic banking machines, and they would have come up with something that nobody recognised. Whereas instead the guy came along and said, oh, there's this thing called automatic teller machines. So we put the term in and we put an ATM, and lo and behold, we found stuff. And that was really radical. And nowadays everybody takes that for granted, that you can go to a computer and find things. But it was a major step forward from the mid-70s onwards, and really has taken off with the World Wide Web since the mid-90s. So that has brought the information to us and changed the role of libraries, that you can now do all the stuff outside of libraries and you don't have to go to see a librarian to get you the... People always talk about libraries as being dusty, don't they? So you don't have to go to a dusty library to get a dusty librarian to get your volume off the shelf. They're going to love this. But
how many people can we offend today?
Yeah. The other thing that happened, you know, and this is a hero story, so... We had villains last time around or the time before. This time we've got heroes. He may be a hero who irritates people, but this is Leon Garfield, who lumbered us with the citation business, which has now become such that, you know, we're hearing about the university rankings. We won't talk about that today either, based on citations. So what did Garfield do? Garfield recognised he wasn't the first person to do it, but he was probably the first person to do it sitting in front of a computer, that this business of documents citing other documents, generally articles citing earlier journal articles, was a web of relationships.
Yes.
It was a community. It was a community activity. And it carried some information.
Mm-hmm.
So it was part of that information energy flow within the ecosystem, accordingly.
Yes.
Yeah.
Energy transfer. So the energy transfer went two ways. The later article that cited the early article took energy from that article, but it also gave energy back in that it gave recognition to it. So Garfield came up with this as a method of actually information searching. He said, okay, words don't really work, you know, because... people don't know what an ATM is. You can't go and look that up until the Library of Congress takes 10 years to decide. But, hey, we can find articles on ATMs from 2 years ago and see who's citing it now, and they will be on the same subject. So he was such a purist. It was Science Citation Index, and then Social Science Citation Index was what he founded. And it wasn't until he retired that... that Web Science or Science Citation Index had abstracts with the articles. He was a purist on the citation linking.
Right.
Okay, that's really interesting, at least to me. But what they recognised early on is that some things got cited more than others. Probably not surprising, but, you know, Watson and Crick and the structure of the double helix structure of DNA, that got cited an awful lot.
Yes.
More than something by somebody that we've never heard of. And I can't think of an example because all the examples I could think of would be famous articles that have been well cited.
Yes.
So that then created a metric for prestige or a metric for engagement or interest at the level of the article, but more particularly, but also at the level of the journal.
Mm.
So that it was obvious that articles from some journals got cited more than others. So then sometime in the 70s, don't quote me when, we got journal citation reports came out, which gave the dreaded impact factors of the journals. So they're all these prestige economy things. So citation linking draws from earlier articles to later articles, and in doing that, it confers prestige. And this really forms the basis of bibliometrics and other research metrics, and now we've got altmetrics and so on, but bibliometrics was the original. So by comparing the number of times things had been cited, it was possible to confer prestige on specific specific works, specific articles, on individuals, and out of that we get the H index, which we won't go into here, but everybody's heard of. When I first heard of it, I thought it was a bit of a joke, but it's become just one of everybody knows their H index and worries about it. And also the journal impact factor. So publishing in certain journals is supposed to be more prestigious than in other journals. Now, Garfield didn't invent the idea of prestige. People already knew that some journals were more prestigious than others, but he gave it a metric. And this has become something that we all now worry about. Some people say they don't worry about it or become annoyed by it, and that's a perfectly valid reaction as well. But it is a thing in the world.
Yes.
And it's now become deeply entwined with scholarly publishing and the academic journal.
But again, because it's just a metric, it doesn't necessarily talk about the quality of the actual research, does
yeah.
it? It's
yeah.
not a measure of the quality of the research actually done. It's just yeah. because you're publishing in Nature or Science.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right. And there's a lot that's exactly right. There's a lot of argument about that always.
Mm.
That you know,
but it's a proxy though, isn't
yeah,
it?
It is.
That's the idea of a proxy, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's exactly it. So, you know, the fact that you live in the most prestigious suburb in Palmerston North doesn't mean that you live in a big house,
no.
but it may tend to suggest that you do. And the fact that you live in another suburb, doesn't mean that you live in a smaller house, but it may tend to suggest that you do.
Yes.
And I'm sure we can generalise that to other cities as well. Palmerston North just happens to be the one we're in at the moment.
Okay, so is that everything on discovery and citation?
Yeah, I think so. Well, we've talked about the prestige economy, yeah. but this then leads us, I think, very neatly into
how to buck the system.
And how to buck the system, yeah. Mm. So we've looked at validity, we've looked at peer review, and we've looked at prestige, and we've looked at money. So when we get, and we've looked at trust. So when we get questions of money and trust, these lead automatically to bad behaviour.
Yes.
So who wants to tell us about bad behaviour on the part of journals and publishers?
Catherine, over to you. Well, this particular case, which obviously was a very significant one, that Elsevier published fake journals, Elsevier, one of our big five publishers today, would not want this to be widely known, but there was this...
It is widely known.
Is it? Okay. Well, Unfortunately, they published a whole range of fake medical journals. I think the number was six, at least six. One of them in particular, the Australasian Journal of Bone and Joint Medicine, came out in two issues, or two volumes, each having two issues, in 2003. And all that this particular journal was a compendium of reprinted articles and case studies and review articles that had been published elsewhere, or, more importantly, had been sponsored, had been planned by Merck, one of the big pharmaceutical companies. Merck had got in ghostwriters from the affiliated institutions, or with researchers with affiliations, and had got them to ghostwrite particular.
So the pharmacists or the researchers that were belonging to the pharmaceutical company, they had their names removed from the article, and it was only the kind of the ghost writers that
had their names. Exactly. So it was obviously a big marketing ploy. The marketing department of Merck obviously thought this was the way forward, because very, very interestingly, only the United States and New Zealand have what is called direct to consumer advertising, which it was news to me. I didn't realize this, but of course we see it on the television, don't we, so much for Celebrex and all these other products, and out of the developed world, it's only the US and New Zealand. So they had to look for other ways of marketing their products. And the trouble with this particular case was that there was this product, Vioxx, which was a particular arthritis medication that was punted in all of these issues, in all of this fake journal, and literally the next year was withdrawn because of its links to heart attacks and strokes. In fact, it's become known as the most significant withdrawal of any medication on the market, and this was a year after the fake journals punted the use of this product. I mean, it appeared in advertisements in the journal and so on. And it's even, this whole case has sparked a publishing industry, because there are a number of publications looking at this as a kind of case study of what can happen when the system is manipulated by the marketing departments of big business.
Right. So they failed to disclose the funding, and they failed to disclose the true authors.
Yes.
Yes.
So the authors whose names were on the papers, they hadn't actually done the work or written
no.
written out.
And more to the point, the editorial board that we were talking about earlier, as being a position of such prestige, had a number of Australians on the editorial board, and one New Zealander. Should I mention his name?
No.
But most of them were horrified to find that they had been put there without having been asked.
Yeah.
And I'm assuming that the New Zealand was in the same category, because his reputation remains intact. So it must. The point is, it was this unscrupulous behaviour of co-opting them without their permission.
Yeah.
Right.
Wow. I mean, that's very close to the behaviour of a predatory journalist.
It is indeed.
Well, we'll talk about predatory journals in a future instalment, but I hadn't realised it was that bad.
Right. No, thank you, Catherine. That was really interesting, because certainly the article that I read that was sent around the group was very short, and it didn't have quite such.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
But I had a look at the four issues,
Oh, they're still around. So
they are available on the web in PDF form. Yes.
Is there any comment on them? As like,
no,
that they're in disrepute, or
no, they're not. But I would imagine you can only really get to them via articles which have very clearly indicated that they are highly disreputable.
Yeah. And see, although only New Zealand and America market directly to the public, doctors are marketed to very vigorously,
indeed.
And doctors actually do the prescribing. So, and they rely.
Yes.
They rely on these things. I mean,
yes.
I think we all rely on peer review all the time. We just don't often know it.
Yes. And Well, and I mean, very often these academics are co-opted through honoraria and whatever else to get them to do it. And I think this is partly the difficulty is what allows a researcher to be co-opted for the sake of whatever, just to have their name up in lights.
Yeah. That's nasty, isn't it? Mm. Okay. The one I was, how are we doing for time? We'll be all right?
Yeah.
Should we pause now?
Yes,
okay, go to a commercial break, and then I'll come back to talk briefly about...